Well, hello everyone. Here we are at the 2006 ODCE conference, and we are recording this podcast from the Cyber Cafe. And I'm here with Richard Bowers from OLN, who's at the controls, and we're delighted to have joining us John Seely Brown, who was our keynote presenter today.
Thank you.
And we have just a few minutes, but so many questions I want to ask you, but maybe I can distill them down to just a few here. And of course, you know, our listeners kind of need to know the context of your talk this morning to really understand this. But
give it to them.
Maybe I can't hear in a sense.
Let me test you.
Okay, well, you described how we should be taking advantage of a pervasively networked world and the ease of multimedia production to enable situated learning, peer-based learning, and cognitive apprenticeship. And for students, learners today, to really learn that way is really what is necessary for people to survive in the flat world we're moving into. How does that sound?
I think that's good. I would say also to prepare ourselves to enter a trajectory of careers, not just a career. All of us are going to be moving through multiple careers. And I think the other twist I would put is the importance of the play of imagination. I think that we've been looking at learning as too much direct transfer and not enough understanding that we can take something from here and apply it over here, but it's not going to be rote. It's going to be done by a very creative act. And I think that schooling and theories of education have downplayed the importance of the play of imagination, which I think is going to become increasingly important as the world dynamically evolves faster and faster. The ability then to have an imaginative leap from this space to that space is going to become more important.
Right. It really resonates well with what Tom Friedman said in his book about workers needing to be adaptive and specialized in the flat world.
And the ability to be dynamically specialized. The subject of our book is dynamic specialization, the new book, because it no longer pays just to become an expert on one narrow thing. You have to embed yourself in the learning ecology itself so that you're constantly at the edge and pushing that edge in terms of what you can do even within that slice of the world that you think you're an expert in.
Mm-hmm. Well, these learning environments you describe are certainly ones I want to participate in, and they're learning environments I'm trying to participate in now through participation in the blogosphere and other types of tools of network communication. But I'm struck by a number of the disconnects that I see between the world you're describing and where we are right now. And there are a whole number of them, but maybe I'll just describe my personal experience first. We'll probably cover a lot of them. I work at a community college, which is the largest distance learning provider in the state. And I do not see digital natives at my college. And I do not hear faculty coming to me and saying, my students are way ahead of me. In fact, it's just the opposite. And I'm wondering why that is. Because I believe the digital native is a real thing. But am I on the far side of a digital divide, perhaps? And what does this say about the readiness of our students to enter this world that you're describing?
You know, I'm aware of what you're saying. I've seen it at a different massive community college in Arizona. And I have not had the opportunity to do kind of ethnographic studies of what's going on. I am suspicious of what you say. I think that some of these students, if you know how to talk to them and engage them, that they know a lot more than they appear to know. But when they walk into the classroom, they expect to be taught. And so if they don't know how to do something, they think it's your job to teach them. Whereas the real job is how do you create a context for them to understand that they can pick up almost anything on their own, and if they don't understand something, they ought to kind of talk to somebody else and help figure it out. So when you and I grew up, at least when I grew up, and pretty much today is still true, there's a tremendous focus on IQ. IQ seems to be so important in everybody's mind. You know, IQ coupled to SATs, coupled to standardized tests, well, however you want to look at it. But in the real world that Tom Friedman and I talk about in our various books on offshoring, et cetera, you know, it's not just IQ any longer. It's EQ and CQ. EQ having to do with social intelligence. How well can I walk into a room and pick up what's going on? How well do I read the world? How well can I find resources, you know, social resources to help me do something? And then CQ having to do with communication intelligence. How well can I articulate my confusion? How well can I communicate what I need to know to you? So basically, if you have this triangle of IQ, EQ, and CQ, my guess is that we ought to be focusing a little bit more on EQ and CQ. But the way we run even community colleges today, it's basically the delivery of material. It's like, give me the fish, don't give me the fishing pole. And I think we have to step back and find out if there are ways to couple in. And what I'm struck by, because I actually grew up in multifarious ways, I'm a major motorcyclist and spent my life in motorcycle groups, let's call them.
Not gangs.
Well, you're a state police here. Might have a different point when I came through here last time. But anyway, the catch is that these kids who expect to be taught have no trouble figuring out how to tinker with things. And I think we have to bring back a love and our appreciation of tinkering writ large. And I think that kids who expect to be taught can actually be exposed or encouraged to tinker in peer groups. And in the tinkering of peer groups, they start to learn how to help each other, bootstrap their own understandings, and so on and so forth. So kind of the fundamental thesis that our latest book, The Only Sustainable Edge, is really pushing is Operation Bootstrap. How do you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps by working with others to get better faster?
Right. So really the challenge then is we have a pedagogy that perhaps excludes those types of skills. I mean, we're really not seeing it because we have a prism that eliminates
that. A prism that eliminates it. And what I'm not sure of yet is when kids walk onto campus, they don't switch. That they now expect this is the new game space. This game space is where it's your job to transfer something to me.
Well, that comes from the K-12 experience, and
right.
I wanted to ask you about that too, because I look at a lot of districts, and the network is virtually cut off from these students. Blogs are blocked,
right.
And MySpace, and a lot of these other things where these students live and function and learn are blocked. How do we get over that hump to open up that world and bring that into the K-12 experience?
I think the key thing is to look at after-school programs. That I've even been looking at the notion of charter schools that are actually after-school charter schools. So they authorize or authenticate these after-school programs. Now, you know, I've just come a little while ago from South Chicago, which is kind of a tough area, urban school to the extreme. And I've never seen kids so engaged in learning how to use GarageBand, learning how to mix their own songs, learning how to do remix, learning how to build their own soundstage, so on and so forth. They wanted to do podcasting. Okay. Now, they were totally engaged. They were writing notes, these kids that couldn't write, because they wanted to get better at doing something they passionately cared about. And so it's a sense that maybe today we're not very good at figuring out where kids' passions are, and coupling into them, and then understanding how to leverage that in the world of exploring, tinkering, building, designing, learning from each other. And then from that, you start to build a spiral out to some of the more core curricula in terms of how do you engage in rigorous reasoning, rigorous argumentation, learning how to learn, and so on.
Right. One more disconnect question and get towards more positive growth. I look at our national broadband policy, and I'm wondering if it's antithetical to what we're trying to accomplish here. We've dropped down to, I guess, the middle teens in rate of broadband adoption. Our connection speeds are lower than what other people experience. And now we have a regulatory movement that's pushing towards a two-tiered internet. Do we have a problem here? Are we setting national policies that are really antithetical to the vision that you see?
I think we're doing one of the most destructive things we could do to maintain an innovative America. I spend a good share of my time in Asia. One of the reasons I go to Korea is because that's the leading edge of the digital world. They have honest-to-God broadband virtually everywhere and have had it for 10 years. So you can begin to understand how this starts to impact the working life, the learning life, the creative life, the social life. And, you know, what we call broadband here they call drinking through a straw. We're completely unaware of what is immersed in real broadband capability in terms of new ways to work, collaborative work, distributed learning, learning on demand, so on and so forth. And the whole world of the visual, most of us are thinkers. Well, if you really want to start passing visual imagery, you want to construct your own three-dimensional animated visual systems, you know, this starts to take a little bit of bandwidth. And by the way, these are things that kids love to do as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're gathered here at this conference, at least nominally, as being part of a statewide network. And we're trying to look holistically and trying to bring Ohio into the 21st century, taking advantage of the types of tools and techniques that you described. How do we begin at a state level to foster this throughout our entire educational system? Or is it something that's maybe more emergent and we just need to create the space for it to build itself?
Well, any real change happens through three processes. One, the top has to assert this is important. So it has to authorize the bigger, the bolder vision. Then, secondly, you have to have a very rich, organic movement from the bottom of people trying things out. So you want to have basically an ecology of experiments going on, of ideas, trials, that people are learning from each other in these experiments, the kids are learning from each other as well. And then you want to look at, kind of halfway up, what are infrastructural tools that facilitate kind of letting the emergent, how do you scaffold the emergent to deliver the vision from the top? So I think it's a tripartite game.
Right. Well, just on a personal note, in going to your website, I noticed that you did not have a blog.
Right.
And anyone who's anyone has a blog these days, right? I'm wondering what tools you take advantage of to create your own learning environment.
If you notice, if you go to the other website, The Only Sustainable Edge, we do have a blog.
Okay. Well, then I failed in my research then, didn't I?
you gotta look in the periphery, too. But that blog is basically done by my colleague, John Hagel, not me. The catch to me is, how do you really appreciate the work it takes to be on the edge? For example, just coming here, you're the second person now in a couple of weeks that have brought up, you know, maybe there's something going on with the students entering the community college that we don't yet really understand. Now, you know, I have a set of conjectures, and, you know, walking away from this podcast, I'm going to tell you that day after tomorrow I'll be at USC talking to some people saying, okay, we got to send some anthropologists into a different context, because my guess is you're reading these students wrong, but that's my guess, and I hope I'm right, because I'm at the community colleges all over Asia, and this is not what I'm finding there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right too, because that means, I mean, we know about what we can do to do things differently. You talked about it this morning, but at the same time, I'm seeing fundamental technology literacy skill missing, such as students not being able to save a particular file to a certain area of their hard drive, which seems to be maybe a little bit different than using some of these tools of digital communication.
Right, and as you know, as we talked about earlier, it may be that they expect to be taught that, as opposed to they expect to find that out, because they want to do something they care about. So if they're saving their music, I bet they figure out how to do that, especially if they created the music. So I think that to create a holistic experience and context where they're creating something that gives voice to themselves that then can be passed around just unleashes unbelievable amount of learning, unleashes an unbelievable amount of passion to pick up more knowledge about something and so on and so forth. And I just think that that is almost a genetic factor that makes people people. And I think we haven't figured out a good way to tap that in today's world.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about changing the learning experiences for our students, but do we function as a community on our college campuses as learning environments, learning organizations?
Well, as you know, one of my major mantras is institutions of higher learning are tragically not learning institutions themselves. So I find that is a real fallacy, a real problem as we move forward. And in fact, one of the reasons why this is something we have to pay increasingly rapid attention to is you're going to find that the private institutions such as University of Phoenix is nothing but a learning institution. What they're learning day in and day out, the experiments they're running, the measurements they're taking, their willingness to tinker with the curriculum to get it better, faster, you're going to see them scale out of, you know, out of reach. They are kind of like Toyota in the automotive industry.
One final question. Also part of our learning community here in Ohio are the legislators. And they want to know that dollars are being spent wisely. And I can see some of them looking at what you've described and say, well, gee, how do we measure this? If each student is pursuing their own passion, how do we hold the education system accountable if they're teaching in this way?
I think there are two answers. One, if you can actually get kids passionately turned on, you may find that they do moderately well with a small amount of work on your standardized tests. I've seen several places where we're being able to prove that out in Rhode Island. I think the other thing to recognize is by unleashing peer-based learning communities, you're finding an amazing way to increase productivity because they're doing the learning themselves. They're doing the teaching themselves. And so the role of the mentor actually becomes kind of, you know, a relatively small role, and so basically the power of the teacher is being amplified without just having to teach 100, 200, 300 person classes. Instead is there to basically stimulate and help these learning, these peer-based learning communities get off the ground, keep getting out of ruts and so on and so forth. It also, I might add, suggests a completely new positioning for the public libraries, community libraries, and school libraries. Because, you know, librarians are masters at nurturing scholarship, nurturing communities, helping you find things, but also helping you amplify serendipity. It's not just helping you do search, it's helping to expand where you may want, what you may want to be interested in, given you're interested in this. And so I think you're going to find, I think, that we're going to rethink and reposition and increase the importance of librarian skills in the digital age and the role of the public community libraries.
Great. Well, I know your schedule is tight, you need to move on, but I want to thank you for being a mentor to us here for a few hours this morning and really trying to chart where we need to go to help all the learners here in Ohio. So thank you very much.
I think you'll find that the learning is going bi-directional here, so that's good. Thank you.
Thank you.